Welcome to Discover Lafayette, a show dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'm Jeanne Swift. Today's episode is made possible by the support of Lafayette Convention and Visitors Commission. For more information on local restaurants, events, and upcoming festivals, please visit lafayettetravel.com. Today's guest is Paul Q, a freelance photojournalist who's well known in our community and also has his work that's been taken and used across the country. And the reason I wanted Paul to be a guest today is not only do you document the culture, but Paul has actually been creating some of our local culture. So this will be an opportunity for us to talk about your background and also some things that have been going on the last year or two in your life. So welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Very glad to be on Discover Lafayette this week.
We met, we were talking about my daughter Taylor before the show. I met you several years back, and I think you were just up and coming in your work as a photojournalist.
Absolutely, yeah. I started working at for Gannett at the Daily Advertiser and Times of Acadiana, of course, in 2012, right after college. And I think I met you sometime in that period, maybe 2013 or so.
Yeah.
So I worked there for a little over 3.5 years, and right out of college and, you know, fresh face at the Daily Advertiser.
Right.
And, you know, it ended up just being time for me to move on and try new things. And here we are.
Yeah.
Two years later.
You grew up in the area. So let's kind of roll back and talk about growing up in Vermilion Parish and your family and how they ended up in South Louisiana.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my my parents are both refugees of the Vietnam War. They came here to the United States in the 1970s. And my dad first immigrated or took refuge in Michigan, and my mom ended up here first. And my
they didn't know each other?
No, they didn't know each other until they met in Abbeville. He ended up moving down to Louisiana, I think in the late 70s, and he worked in machine shops. My dad was a blue-collar worker. He was a machinist who worked in hot, sweaty shops and working with metal, working with machine parts all day. And my mom was a diner chef and a diner waitress down in Abbeville. And they ended up meeting, and they got married in the early 80s, and they had us four children down in Abbeville, Louisiana, born and raised.
Did they speak French? What language did they speak when they moved here? Was it just Vietnamese or?
So my dad was my dad was born in Vietnam, and he, I think, grew up in the period following French colonization and everything. So he understands a little bit of French. He's not very fluent.
Okay.
So, similar to me, I think he knows some words
and
just a little bit. Yeah, and just like everybody else around here, everybody else knows at least a little bit of French. But they came here not speaking a lick of English.
Oh my goodness.
Came over here on the boats, and my mom herself was maybe 13 or 14 years old. She was just a young teenager at the time, and so they endured some pretty dark times to get here into the States. So it's pretty proud to be part of that sort of story.
Are they still in Abbeville?
Absolutely, yeah. They're both in Abbeville. They're both semi-retired right now. A lot of health issues. They've both had strokes over there the past 10 years, and we've just been dealing with ongoing health issues in the family.
Right.
So they, you know, they're very supportive, and you know, that's kind of where my drive comes from, to see how they worked very hard as immigrants who were putting their first generation children through Catholic school.
Four kids.
All four of us went to Mount Carmel Elementary and Vermilion Catholic down in Abbeville, and it was quite a sacrifice they had to make to make sure that we got the education that they wanted for us.
Right.
And they wanted us to succeed right off the bat. Yeah.
Did you know as a young boy that you enjoyed photography? Did that come about at an early age? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd always, on family vacations, family events, and campouts, and what, my dad would always hand me the camera or I'd have my own camera that, mm-hmm. you know, that was given to me as a gift, or I'd use disposable cameras and stuff. So there was always a camera in my hand that I was able to learn from, and I always enjoyed capturing moments and giving my parents the role. They'd go to Walmart or to Eckerd's Drug mm-hmm. or something, and do 1 hour processing, and I'd get the photos back, and it was gratification,
right? You know,
just to see something that happened in the past, but it's tangible proof,
mm-hmm.
and it was always something that stuck with me, and ended up making it into a career that I've been doing for the past 8
right.
years.
Yeah. So, I'm thinking back about how film always had to be developed. Did mm-hmm. you learn all that? Did you know how to develop film, or what did you depend on Eckerd's?
I started off shooting film. My dad wasn't one to do processing at home. You know, it was quite an investment. You'd have to have the space. You'd have to have the equipment and the chemicals.
And,
And so we never had that space at home. So we always did 1 hour processing. So unfortunately, I didn't go to photography mm-hmm. school. I didn't go to study photography in college or anything. So I never had the opportunity to learn how to do darkroom processing. But
is that even necessary in today's world? You know,
there are still people who shoot film, and I have friends who shoot film all the time, constantly, uh-huh. and they produce some really nice work out of it. So, with digital being the dominant force these days, film is something that people have to consciously choose to shoot. And so, I've noticed my friends who shoot film, they consciously do it, and it shows in their work that they put the effort into shooting the film, because it is tangible. There's only 36 exposures or 24 exposures in a roll.
You have to be more precise, I guess.
They have to put a lot more thought into what they do. And not that, obviously, that digital photography is thoughtless or anything.
Right.
But they have to put a lot more intention behind every single shot, or else they're just wasting time and money mm-hmm. at that point. So I do have a lot of respect for those people.
Right.
But not coming up from there, it's a whole foreign world to me. I started doing digital photography in 2010. And by that time, everybody was just shooting digitally.
We were looking at some of your photos, and mm-hmm. Everything I've ever seen that's been published mm-hmm. that you've taken, Paul, they're rich and vivid. And you capture the life behind, like you capture the story, but also the lives behind it. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm curious, listening to you, you didn't study that in college. But that was really, you must have loved it.
Absolutely.
But you got like a regular degree so you could have a day job if you needed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I started out, not unlike yourself, I wanted to do law school.
Uh-huh. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah,
I thought about it.
I thought about it for a minute, and I'm still pretty young, I'm only 28.
Yeah,
so
you can always
the option
do that.
Is still there. Yeah, the option is still there if I want to make my, my mom's pretty happy with where I am now.
I bet.
But if I want to make the other gossiping aunts happy, yeah, maybe I'll end up going a more traditional career path eventually. But, I'm just enjoying the ride as it is. But, I did start out in political science,
mm-hmm.
and I love the degree. The program at UL is fantastic, and I had some of the most dedicated teachers I ever had in my life were at UL. So it was a great program, and it was I was able to learn the terminology behind local government, state government, and everything. So it actually did help.
What you covered, that probably helped you.
It helped me be more comfortable with digesting the information.
Right.
Where I'll sit through an infamous 5 hour school board meeting, and I'd understand everything that was going mm-hmm. on, because I had to learn it in college, and it was something that was already fairly familiar to me. So
right, and you had to learn patience too, huh?
Yeah.
That they don't teach in college.
Absolutely.
So what led you to The Advertiser? What brought you to work mm-hmm. on staff with The Daily Advertiser?
So right around 2011, I'm just going to give you the whole story, right around 2011, I was doing photography, for money whenever I was in college. I had started a business mm-hmm. by then, and I was photographing more and more music shows and events and stuff, and I was working for the yearbook at UL, Lacadian yearbook mm-hmm. at UL. At the time, I was one of their main photography contributors. And so throughout the 2011-12 year, that was my senior year of college, kind of just built up a portfolio of events and mm-hmm. different community happenings and everything. So through that job, I just like was able to cut my teeth. And that spring, one of my now good friends, Danny Colbert, he asked me to join him as his assistant photographer. He was named the lead photographer for Festival International that year. And he brought me on board, and he was able to, you know, kind of show me the ropes. And then the week of graduation, he tells me, hey, my old job, he formerly had the position that I had whenever at the advertiser. He told me that the position was open.
And what an opportunity.
That I should apply for it. And so finals week, the very last finals week, you know, my grades weren't exactly stellar that semester, so that was stressful in that manner. Yeah. You know, Festival International had happened the week prior, and I was also preparing for a job, the major job interview for me.
Right around times of final, huh?
Right,
finals were
coming. Finals week, exactly, yeah. So I did finals and a job interview in the same week, and I don't know how I'm here 6 years later.
Well.
But I'm still alive. But
what an opportunity.
Yeah,
everything
fell into my lap. You know, it's always about right place, right time.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of helped me, guide me through building a portfolio and getting my best snaps together and everything. And yeah, we ended up getting a job with the Daily Advertiser the week of graduation in 2012. And I
stayed. Your family was so thrilled.
My mom was very happy, yeah.
Yeah.
And I stayed there until the end of 2015, right before Christmas, I ended up leaving.
So you really got to, as a young person, I mean, what were you, 22?
22. Yeah.
I mean, you just got to see it all and learn how to conduct yourself and I guess learn from other photographers.
Absolutely.
How they make a living.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about how nobody really knows when they get into something like how, you know, what do you charge? How do you do this? So you were able to be in a paid position and get to kind of learn the ropes.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird. On half of it, it was like I was just dropped into the deep end.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really know that world before, journalism and how to write cut lines, captions, that is.
So they asked their photographers to also
write. That's 100% part of the job, yeah.
Oh.
And so we had to write cut lines. I had to, you know, pick up news judgment, like how to find stories and how to understand what to photograph, so it could stay relevant and everything. So there was a lot of things I had to learn on that end, but also having a steady job, a steady paycheck.
Yeah, that takes the pressure off.
Right out of college, I was able to kind of ease into the professional world. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that sort of path that life took me on in that direction kind of has prepared me pretty well to be a freelancer.
So a few years later, you ended up, I guess you decided, I'd like to try this on my own. So tell me about the things that you cover now. It seems like I see your name associated with just about any type of journalism, from events going on, like festival, to tragedies that take place locally.
I don't really cover a whole lot of news, very obviously not as much as I did whenever I was at the newspaper, but I'm still very active in photographing the community. My main outlet I work with, there's two really main outlets that that get most of my work, the Acadiana Advocate and the Advocate newspapers in Louisiana.
You travel the state? Do they send
you assignments? They have enough freelancers and photographers across the state that they have the territory pretty covered. So it's mostly around here. I work with my former coworker from the Daily Advertiser, Leslie Westbrook. He's the photographer on staff, and so we work pretty closely together. So I cover events and different news items and stuff around Acadiana, and also work with Country Roads out of Baton Rouge.
That's a wonderful.
They've been really putting a lot of effort into covering this side of the state, and I've been trying to take on assignments from them as much as I can to kind of help, you know, show off our side of the state, because we do have a pretty rich and unique blend of cultures in South Louisiana.
Yeah,
over here.
It seems like I used to see it. It would be more New Roads, that outlying areas past Baton Rouge. So
yeah.
I didn't realize that.
And I think they're putting a lot of good effort. So they had me, you know, I licensed a few Mardi Gras images, and they have me talking to different authors and people and chefs and different restaurants and you know, just different events that happen in South Louisiana.
Right.
They're very, very much on top of it. I it's been a joy working with them.
So you write for them also, or just take photos?
No, I haven't written anything for them as of yet, but it's mostly it's just photos so far, and I work with a reporter. Usually they have a reporter out of here,
and you just, yeah,
who I work with,
partner.
And it's been pretty fun covering things for them, mm-hmm. and getting to see South Louisiana through the lens of a magazine,
right?
Where it's a little bit more thought out rather than, you know,
right.
It's more of a long form type of format.
So if someone wanted to hire you, you do event photography. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do they contact you and look at your work?
Yeah, my website is on paulq.com, mm-hmm. and I'm sure they're gonna place it on the lower third.
Yeah, it's K-I-E-U.
PAULKIEU.com. Uh-huh. And I'm on Instagram as well. You can search that name, search my name on Instagram. So Instagram is probably the most up-to-date outlet for me. It's just very, very simple to use.
I'm having to learn all that. I put too many words. It's more visual.
It's more visual.
And I'm more blah, blah, blah.
It's more visual. I usually try to keep it to like three sentences. But
I know. I need to be like, you know, trained in that.
And I usually stick to Instagram, to Facebook. So I do a lot of events, a lot of corporate events, mm-hmm. a lot of, been doing a lot of weddings. I've covered the past 3 weeks. I've had a handful of weddings. And
boy, what a cultural event in this area, huh?
Yeah,
there's some beautiful outdoor weddings.
Between now and Festival International, I have like another two weddings or so. So it's a busy time in Acadiana, especially, I mean, it's wedding season
right
now. Yeah.
And we're just getting off. I want to kind of segue, Paul, into what we just got off of, Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
And I do want to get in that you and some of your friends helped started Crew de Canai.
Absolutely.
And that is, I think that was a big success for the first year.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Crew de Canai was a concept. Last year, a friend and I were chatting after Mardi Gras, and we always take to heart. We have this event planning group that we'll get to talk about that, but we have an event planning group called the Clandestine Collective, and so we always just try to put on events mm-hmm. that people around here might not have seen. And it's not necessarily something that's been done for the first time ever in the world. It's not necessarily unique or groundbreaking or anything, but it's something that we look at Lafayette and it's like, mm-hmm. hey, I think people would have fun
It'd
at that.
It'd be fun to do that.
Yeah, and that's at the core of it. And we just really want to show people that they could do it too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes it's a little dedication and to be able to find the funding, to be able to find this time and the scheduling. So it takes some dedication, but it can be done. So that's what we wanted to do.
What was the, do you remember the first event that Clandestine Collective put on, or one of the first
events? We put on a screening, actually, of a Kanye West short film, a 35-minute short film, the night before Thanksgiving in 2016. We put it on behind Ruckus Skate Shop and Line Up Records in downtown Lafayette, in the little alley. So.
You had
that was
a good
pretty fun.
Turnout?
Yeah, we had a good turnout. We had about 75 to 100 people there. And we had announced it less than 36 hours before, so it was pretty cool
to
like get people.
It just pops up.
Yeah.
Like a pop-up event.
Yeah. But as to the parade, my friend Hunter Hebert and I, mm-hmm. he works for Downtown Development Authority now. We got to talking and we were like, you know, why don't we start a parade? And we posted it onto Facebook, and it turns out, again, like I said, it's not the most original idea. Other people had that idea too. They were just looking for collaborators.
Mm-hmm.
The people had just been waiting to see if there were collaborators who would be willing to put in the time and effort into.
And it does take time and effort.
It took a lot of time
parade.
And effort. So
yeah.
So we formed a board. There's I think seven of us now. It's myself. Marketing professional named Rodney Hess,
mm-hmm.
Julie Borlaw, who runs the Southern Screen Film Festival, Leah Grafe, Blaze Peterson, Paige Bate, who's our board attorney, and Blaze, did I say Blaze Peterson already?
I think so.
Yeah, I might have. But we have a pretty great group. Great group of folks who are really dedicated to the Mardi Gras vision. And we wanted to, be the change that we saw.
And it was the change. The focus, it looked like to me, was inclusion.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
It was mobile as far as on foot.
Mm-hmm.
People were on foot, but you didn't have to have big floats. And I couldn't make it. We were so mm-hmm. immersed with Mardi Gras this year, but were y'all throwing beads or just like trinkets?
Yeah.
It wasn't
the same type of parades. The police allowed us to have no barricades on the route, mm-hmm. and it was only a mile route through downtown Lafayette, and it was a different route, and we didn't want to do the same old thing. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, I threw parties for Rio, I threw parties for Napoleon and the Monday night parades and everything. So I love those parades. But we just wanted to try something a little bit mm-hmm. different, because people had been to New Orleans, they had seen the walking parade traditions over there, and we thought, why not us? So
we had some
citizen marching some citizen marching bands. Next year we're hoping to get some school marching bands in there.
That'd be great.
And we didn't have barricades, and we wanted it ground level so people can see our costumes. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of work that people put into their costumes.
What did you wear?
So my group dressed up as ice skaters. The theme of this year's parade was local legends, mm-hmm. and so just famous happenings, any funny kind of things in Lafayette, or Acadiana rather.
That was humorous, some of the people y'all chose.
Yeah. There was an all-girl dance crew who all dressed as Sharon Moss.
I saw that.
Yeah. So that was pretty funny. Sharon,
she was okay with that?
Sharon got a kick out of that. She really loved it. They went in, they did a toast, and they got her blessing mm-hmm. out at Moss BMW. So they it was all tongue in cheek. You know, we never intended to punch down on anybody. Yeah. We wanted to pay comedic tribute mm-hmm. to things in Lafayette. So we ended up having Louis Dumont, who's the all-time leading scorer of the league that the ice skaters were formerly in. He was a legendary ice skater. He ended up marching with us in that parade.
He's a great guy.
That was pretty cool. And he's just somebody that we all watched as kids. And anybody who was in Louisiana in the late 90s understood what a cultural phenomenon
the ice skaters was.
The ice skaters were. So that was something that we picked, and I dressed mm-hmm. up as Gator. I had a t-shirt cannon, so we were shooting t-shirts out of people. So we had a good old time putting that on, and we really wanted to leave our mark on Mardi Gras to show people that, you know, there are other ways to celebrate Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I participate in Critter to Mardi Gras every year. You know, I put on the mask, I put on the capuchon, and I put on the costume and everything, and I run Mardi Gras with my friends out in the country. We chase chickens and everything.
That's fine.
So there's so many ways to celebrate Mardi Gras. There's not just one way, and we wanted to show the city mm-hmm. in the city limits of Lafayette. We wanted to show people
it
could be safe and fun
and
accessible for all people, all creeds, all colors, and everything. So we wanted everybody to be part of it, and we also wanted it to be sustainable. We didn't want any litter on the ground, and we try to minimize as much of that. So everybody handmade mm-hmm. their own throws or handouts rather. So it was a nice artistic project for everybody to come together and to be able to put their creativity into Mardi Gras in their own way.
If I'd like to find out more about Crew to Kanai, first of all, mm-hmm. How do you spell it? And then where can I look that up if I'm interested in it?
So we're on social media. We're very active on social media. But it is KREWEDECANAILLES.
Kanai. And what does that mean?
It's a little mischief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a little mischievous. So our crew... our crew logo is a royal possum. You know, you think of possums? They're not necessarily. Possums really aren't dangerous, mm-hmm. but they are. They do get into your stuff every now and again. They cause a little. They cause a little havoc. They upturn plants or whatever. But they generally don't mean any harm, and that's exactly what we're going for. We're just trying to cause a little ruckus, but not necessarily hurt anybody, just have a little fun.
Paul, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We're going to probably have some post-discussion on this, but I want to, for the television portion of our interview, I'd like to thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
And again, remind people how they can get in touch with you. It's Paul Q, KIEU.com. For anyone wanting to hire Paul for any event photography you might need, or really check out his website too at paulq.com just for some rich photography. So Paul, I want to hear more about some of the pop-up events. What other things, what's been like some of the most fun things y'all have done to get people together? I guess it's quickly they come together, or some of them long-term planning?
Some of them, they took like a month or two of planning.
Which still isn't that long.
It isn't too bad. So we have a group of five of us. I'm one. My friend Hunter Hebert is one.
Butch Roussel isn't in this mix. Does he help Butch Roussel? Was he involved?
No, Butch is a friend of ours. Uh-huh. He's not involved with us, and I think he's been to a few of our events. I'm not certain, but
he helps with fundraising.
Yeah,
I know,
Butch Roussel and formerly Civic Side, now called the 24-Hour Citizen Project. They helped us get funding. They helped us refine our pitch, and we ended up giving, I think it was a 10-minute presentation at the 24-Hour Citizen Project in last July. This was Cruda Kanai. So Cruda Kanai is a separate project
to get you started
from the clandestine collective that we do. So they kind of give us they give us a huge boost for Cruda Kanai.
And maybe that's where I saw his name.
The Civic Side really gave us the guidance and everything to speak to these backers who were able to give us financial help to get the parade started.
You can have the best idea in the world, but if you can't fund it, it's a non-starter.
Exactly. And there are some things that you can do on a shoestring budget, but with there's some things that money necessitates money.
Yeah, and you had to have that safe. You had to have the parade done the right way.
We had to have the proper way in order to keep everybody safe, keep everybody happy, and to produce a refined product as well. So I think people were very happy with what turned out, but no, as far as the clandestine collective goes, there's five of us. There's myself, there's Hunter Hebert, DJ Digital, who y'all might know from Hot 107.9 Town Square Media. His name is Brandon. One of his coworkers over there. He's on our squad now. Sam Stokes, he's a videographer and a video maker for Town Square Media. And also Burton Durand, who's very well known in this area. He's a graphic designer at BBR, and does a lot of freelance work. But he's with us, and we're kind of just putting on little fun things around town.
Anything coming up in 2018 that
We have a few things that we're tossing. Like we're in a 24-hour a day kind of group chat, like where we'll just talk about random current events in town. Mm-hmm. Just spitting hot takes at each other, like, hey, y'all saw that that new restaurant that went up, and we just had to dump our opinions on each other.
Yeah.
And but we kind of like to reflect current events and current pop culture, especially in Lafayette, like hyper local pop culture.
Right. Well, there's so much.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about in Lafayette, and we talk about all of it in our little group chat. But we constantly spit ideas at each other, and we try to come up with the best possible thing, because we all have our own day jobs. We all have our own passions. Hunter's a father, everybody's got families and friends that they're that they need to spend time with. So we only do the stuff that makes sense for us to do, and that's financially feasible for us to do. So one thing we have coming up, we have a festival. We're planning two festival after parties right now, but we've only announced one. We're having it at the former Stands nightclub downtown Lafayette, and we have a DJ coming in. His name is Manny Fresh, who some of your listeners might know as one half of the Big Timers, who were very very popular hip hop act in the late '90s, mid 2000s. So we're just trying to give people some fun options during festival.
Right.
Some other things that we've done in the past, we had. We started off doing film screenings, as I said earlier. We hosted a comedy tournament alongside the comedy troupe in Lafayette called Lafayette Comedy. We hosted a roast battle where people, stand-up comics, just insulted each other back and forth.
Gosh.
And they made their way through a tournament, and we crowned a winner. Uh-huh. And I honestly
was it tough to pick one?
It was. I wasn't one of the judges, but
there's a lot of people that are talented around here.
Yeah, the judges though, they ended up or not the judges, we actually ended up giving the trophy, the Clandestine Collective did, to one of the judges who was able to, insult everybody on stage that night.
So it's like a,
Yeah.
Everybody was left out.
Everybody was fair game that night.
Uh-huh.
So we had
the gong show.
Yeah, we had fun. We had fun putting on that tournament. Uh-huh. And
you know what I'm thinking? There's so many events going on, uh-huh. and there's so many fundraisers. Mm-hmm. Like, there's great causes, but sometimes you just want to go and not have to have any cause, or just go. Like,
yeah, just go have a fun night.
Casual, nothing expected. Just go laugh, or
see
your buddies.
Yeah, and
get out of the house.
Some of our events have benefited different causes, different organizations that we're friends with, uh-huh. or who we see they need our help getting some exposure or getting some funds. So we had an event back in January where we teamed up with Social Entertainment, and we had a gumbo crawl, which is it's like a bar crawl, but each stop gave out their own gumbo, and everybody got to vote on their favorites.
Oh.
So instead of having a beer, I mean, everybody did have their
own beer.
Might have
had a beer on the sign. Yeah.
At each place, but at each bar, we stopped at five different bars,
uh-huh.
and each one had their own spin on a classic dish. And it was perfect. That happened right after one of the big freezes in mid-January. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
perfect time to make gumbo.
The day that everybody went back to work on that Friday, you know, we had a gumbo event waiting for them, and it was the upper 40s, so it was cold-ish.
But the roads weren't frozen.
The roads weren't frozen, and people weren't like painfully cold outside.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, people were able to bundle up and have a good time at this.
Yeah,
one.
That's so cool. Uh-huh. My daughter Taylor had actually told me about some of this. She said, "Mom, Paul's into all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. He's just making it happen."
Yeah, and that's the thing. For me, whenever I was at the advertiser, I was working quite a bit. With a job like photojournalism.
Yeah. You're on call too, right?
I was on call. Thankfully, I never got called out at like 4 a.m. or anything, mm-hmm. like that.
But you had to really be prepared.
Yeah, I had to be prepared. And I did work some long hours, and I did work some long weeks, mm-hmm. Pretty fairly often. 40-hour week. Standard 40-hour week wasn't very standard for me. That, mm-hmm. that was more of an outlier during the slower times of the year. So I never really had the time to pursue options, and I never really thought that I'd be putting on events.
Yeah. But how fun.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun to be able to, be the answer. Because my friend Hunter and I, we do a lot of things together. So if you go to an event and you didn't have fun at it, rather than complaining about it, why don't you put on, everybody says, why don't you do it? You know,
okay.
why don't you try it?
But very few people do.
Very, very few people do. And that's okay, but we wanted to be one of the, some of the people who did,
mm-hmm.
and so we got some like-minded people together. We started Clandestine Collective, and we had some friends who started Crew to Canai with us.
Yeah.
So it was we just wanted to be able to not have any more excuses. Like, mm-hmm. we'll make our own fun if we don't see things that we want to do anymore.
But anybody can go to these, or are they kind of targeted, like the Clandestine Collective? If I wanted to check out something, it's really more for your friends, or
not necessarily. No,
I mean, Facebook.
All of our stuff is open to the public.
Mm-hmm. And not that I'm gonna crash something, but
for sure. No, there's no such thing as crashing. We open all of our events to everybody, no matter your age. I will say full disclosure. Your
typical demographic.
Our typical demographic
is
usually people we know. So in our early to mid 20s, in our 30s and stuff, and
uh-huh.
But that's just what it skews toward. That's not necessarily all that are welcome. You know, we welcome everybody. You know, it doesn't matter if your race, your mm-hmm. color, your ethnicity, your age, your economic background.
But I love it. You don't have to be a part of a group or something. You just come and
have fun. Everything's pretty open. I mean, mm-hmm. You might not like everything that we do, but we're gonna try and have something that appeals to everybody.
Right.
So that's our goal. And if we've always said that if somebody comes along and starts another group like us, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, we want people to understand that it is possible, mm-hmm. to do it. and do it on a shoestring budget.
Right.
So you know, it's all about keeping good relationships. Mm-hmm. And you know, Mom always told me not to burn bridges. So
that's good advice. Keeping
those relationships have helped us.
Right.
Helped us all along the way.
Yeah. You tell me, speaking of your mother, I know mm-hmm. your parents both had some health issues and mm-hmm. had strokes, if I understand mm-hmm. it right. And I'm so sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
My parents similarly had horrible diabetic complications. And it honestly, it really opened my eyes up to how fragile and precious life is and how fragile health can be.
Mm-hmm.
So you've told me that balance in your life is very important, and I'm kind of glad you didn't go to law school yet, because that's a very imbalanced
yeah,
lifestyle.
It's a very stressful. Yeah.
If you make it through law school, which I know you would, but that early career, it's all about work, and it's very little about outside.
Yeah, and I have some friends who are like 1Ls and 3Ls, and then they're graduates who are waiting to take the bar exam, and I see the kind of life they live. And
they haven't even started yet.
They haven't even started yet. And that's... And I'm very proud of the work that they do, mm-hmm. but it's not for me right now.
Yeah, so. And you found a career that you excel
yeah.
at.
Yeah.
But you talk about that some. You said the balance is important.
Yeah.
Whenever
I was at the, working a full-time job, and that's not to say the working conditions that,
I understand.
Yeah. It's just that the nature of the job is a very stressful job. Working for a newspaper, and that comes with the territory, just journalism in general. It can be long hours, mm-hmm. it can be very stressful, and it's not a very regular schedule most of the time. So whenever I left, I saw that as an opportunity to try new things, to try to see my friends and family as often as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And so to establish more of a better rhythm for myself. And I think that's worked out pretty well. You know, having that balance makes the rest of it just worth it.
Right.
I have a lot more flexibility to, if I want to go see a movie with my friends at 4 p.m. on a Monday.
You can plan
I can,
it,
yeah. Yeah, I can plan that out.
Mm-hmm.
I can't necessarily do that all the time, but I can plan it out.
Yeah.
But,
you know, very few younger people, too, even think about that.
Yeah.
Because it seems like you've got so much time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize how quickly it can go by.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And for me, I didn't want to spend too much time. I don't want to spend too much time just waiting for things to happen.
Mm-hmm. Making
it happen.
In
my life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to just like give it a shove. And you know, whenever I was working in the newspaper world, it was a very stressful time, and my mom had just had a stroke a year prior to that, and I saw life is just too short. I didn't want to.
She's still young.
She's still pretty young. Yeah, she's only 58. Yeah, she
very
just turned
young.
58, so
yeah.
She's still pretty young, and I didn't want there to be a lot of question marks, because mm-hmm. apparently. Cardiovascular issues run in my family, so I didn't want there to be a lot of question marks in my life
right.
if I end up having a premature death. So I'm still pretty young. I'm not beholden to any family right now,
mm-hmm.
Any children rather. I don't have any children. I don't have any significant others or anything
yeah.
right now. So why not try some things out while it's just me?
That's wisdom. There's a Mark Twain quote about that, Paul, about no man fears death when he's living a full life
mm-hmm.
because you're getting everything you can
yeah.
out of life.
Yeah, I'm getting some answers. And that's not to say that I'm, family life will come
yeah.
eventually.
You've got plenty of time.
I've got plenty of time. I'm only 28. And so there's plenty of time. That time will come whenever
mm-hmm.
Whenever it needs to come. But as of now, I'm trying to maximize my output every
right.
day.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure you're asked this a lot, especially with your talent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm personally glad you're here in Lafayette, in Acadiana. Can you tell me, as we wind this down, what do you like about living here? Because I know you could move. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure you could move, but you've got a lot of ties here.
Yeah, I stick around here. My family's here, so that's obviously the biggest tie that
mm-hmm.
I stick around here for. And that's definitely the biggest reason I stay around Lafayette. But I have a very welcoming group of friends,
mm-hmm.
who are all just so warm with each other, and they've taken me in as their own family. So aside from my blood, I have extended family
right.
All throughout Acadiana, and everybody here has just treated me as their own. Over here, there's just something. I've traveled to all over the country. And, you know, I really enjoy traveling. I really enjoy seeing different parts of the country. But every time I come home, there's always just something that feels so special about being here.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, hospitality is baked into mm-hmm. Cajun and Creole and Native American culture down here. And all of the cultures that they're, you know, just starting to gain some traction down here, mm-hmm. like Vietnamese, Cambodian, Laotian culture.
Right.
You know, everybody who's down here, there is a major element and emphasis on family and emphasis mm-hmm. on, you know, celebration and just being around other people. And that's just been very magnetic for me.
And I think it'd be hard, you could find it somewhere else, but mm-hmm. it wouldn't be the same.
It's something that I know, and it's something that I'm still discovering, mm-hmm. because for the longest time, I lived here for 22 years before I started really deeply exploring things in South Louisiana. So, you know, once I credit my job at the Daily Advertiser yeah. with that, to be forced to have to go into a public to meet people that I'm maybe not, you know, go to parts of town that I maybe felt uncomfortable going
yeah,
to.
And document.
Yeah, and understanding that, you know, those people are just like me, those people are just like anybody else, mm-hmm. and, you know, they have a story too. And that's kind of why I stay around here, because I grew up here, and there's still a lot of things I'm unfamiliar with here, but I want to give it the time and the years and the effort into finding out the stories. And so I try to meet as many people as I can. You know, I don't really, if somebody stops me on the street, even if they don't know me or something, like I try to talk to them, you know, try to figure out mm-hmm. how their day is going and stuff.
Yeah.
And everybody has a story, and that's basically why I stay around here. There's a lot of stories here that are vaguely familiar, but it's all about piecing them together.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. That's a good thought. That's why I'm doing this podcast. I love your story,
yeah.
and I want to thank you
Absolutely.
Again for taking time to be here and share the culture that we have. I think we are very blessed. And mm-hmm. Louisiana, you can think what you want about certain things people talk about, but you cannot replace the people or the culture that we
Absolutely.
Have, and it's rich. I think we should be celebrating
yeah.
it every there, day.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in Louisiana. I mean, you can read any number of newspaper any number of news articles a day about the things that could be fixed in our state.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing we do get right is that you know, that sense of community.
Yeah.
And you know, opening doors to strangers and making sure that everybody feels welcome and feels
That's
safe
right.
and feels at home.
Well, thank you, Paul,
yeah.
once again for being with us. I'd like to thank Paul Q, local and actually national now photojournalist who freelances. You can find him and his work at paulq.com. And I'd like to thank Delta Media again, and thank you for listening and for watching this. If you're watching a televised version of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift.